Good morning, friends. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
We're having some glitches today in my getting ready for this. But also, Lou, again, the picture's all the way up. I can't see.
Oh.
Other than my collar, maybe. That's all I can see. But anyway, okay. As long as you can see everything and the our friends are watching.
Then, yes.
Okay. So today we are going to be doing chapter 16, verse 5, 6, and hopefully 7. Let's see if I can move a little faster here and go into that. So verse 5, you remember we've been talking about positive qualities that each one of us has and negative qualities that each one of us has. We're born with the same positive and negative qualities, and a lot depends on what we have done in our previous lives that brings us to this life with positive qualities or negative qualities. That's one. In addition, what company you keep, what you listen to while growing up, what influence you have, what your mood is, all of these things determine what your positive and negative qualities are. So we'll go into that. So verse 5 basically says spiritual wealth is for freedom. Freedom from this world, freedom from desires, all of that. That's what spiritual wealth leads you to. Whereas the wealth of an asura, the wealth of a demon, is for bondage to this world and for desires. Krishna then says, do not worry, Arjuna. You are born to spiritual wealth. So what does this mean? The spiritual wealth of is for freedom means that all of us who are bound to the desires of the world are basically spiraling downwards. The more desire you have for objects, for beings, for sensual pleasures, you are only going to be wrapped up further and further into wanting more of that and a better experience with the same pleasures. And you keep seeking that, and when you die and you go into the next life, you are going to be seeking the same thing again. And in order to procure that, to procure whatever it is that you want, whether it be wealth or beauty or fame or power or whatever it is, you tend to want to say, look, I'll get it at whatever cost, even if it hurts the other person. And that's a very negative quality. So these negative qualities sort of propagate themselves. And that in wealth in Sanskrit is known as sampatti, S-A-M-P-A-T-I, sampatti. And daivi sampatti leads to liberation. That's positive wealth, spiritual wealth. And asuri sampatti leads to bondage. So we are each born, as I said, with daivi qualities and asuri qualities, in different proportions, depending on our past lives, by associating with higher beings, people who are more spiritual than us, people who lead us down the pathway. And that's what this sangat is. We rise in our positive qualities. By associating with lower beings, we devolve. They are going to be leading us towards things that are negative. So the divine qualities, also known as positive qualities, lead you towards moksha. The negative qualities, the devilish qualities, lead you towards further bondage. So the first three verses of chapter 16, if you remember, gave us 26 divine qualities. And throughout the Gita, we've seen that these divine positive qualities of a being keep being repeated over and over again. But only now, for the first time, he talks about the negative qualities. And there are very few, only six that he tells us about. But they're very important. Mm-hmm. Verse 4 gave us these six demonic qualities. These bind us and attach us to the sense organs and our perceptions. And to, therefore, action that leads us to fulfill those desires from the sense organs. And leads to attachment. Both from your mind and intellect, you're attached to the object that you want, to the wealth, to the beauty, to the power, or to another being. And a person cannot get away from these attachments, from these sense organs, from these perceptions. You cannot get away from these ups and downs of emotion and thought. Therefore, You die, you're born again, you come back with the same desires, and it's a cycle that keeps going on and on. And Krishna says to Arjuna here, do not worry. You belong to the divine category, because those who are self-realized can basically tell that somebody has positive qualities and are striving to get better. You and I may not be able to tell, but those people who are in Krishna's can just view a person and say, this person's on the right track. So we are bound to our pleasures of our sense organs and our mind and our intellect. Initially, we are bound to them and we think we have them under our control. But as we progress in life, they have us in their control. Right. So it's like a donkey. You know, the analogy is of a donkey with a rope. You're tied the rope to the donkey and you're dragging him along. You're saying, this is my donkey. I possess him. I control him. But in essence, the donkey's thinking to himself, I control this guy. He can't let go of the rope. Wherever I go, he has to come with me. So similarly, as we get older, our sense organs, our perceptions, our thoughts, our desires have complete control over us. So we are bound. Yet we say we want freedom. Who would want freedom from something that is giving us pleasure? These things give us pleasure. You say you want freedom, but right. You're not willing to give up the pleasure. Only a person who sees himself separate and different from all other life forms experiences bondage and fear, because everything else is separate. We've gone through this before, so I won't go through it again. But one who sees himself the same as everything and everybody around him feels no fear and no bondage. And in fact, in Sanskrit, the term for a self-realized person is one who has no fear. In verse 6, which we're going to come up to next, Krishna gives us the knowledge that helps us to today and in these modern times. So today, corporations and the psychology of the market suggests that corporations are all about profit and making more money, more money, more money. Regardless, they don't really look at the ethics of what they're doing. And getting money from the other person is more important, from the other company, from the other entity is more important. Only today now, ever since Enron, they're starting to talk about the ethics of the corporations, but hasn't really yet sunk in. Verse 6 says, this world has two types of beings, the divine and the asuric. We have already spoken a lot about the divine, Krishna says to Arjuna. Now, Arjuna, he says, listen to me about the asuric. So now he's going to start talking about that. And basically, again, it is the same thing, that the beings here are clearly human beings who see themselves as the ones who do and those who enjoy, which are the jivas. What is life all about? For us, life is all about acquisition and enjoyment. Remember, those are the two things, two words, acquisition and enjoyment. That's what we live for. You should, what I did when I was learning this, I was making notes. And each time I made something, a pearl like this, I would write it down and then I would keep thinking about it. Because it is true that we spend our life just trying to say, I want to acquire X, Y, Z. And then once you acquire it, you want to enjoy it. And then while you're enjoying it, you say, I want to acquire something else. I want to get better pleasure. So remember, so those who are born based on their previous karmas are born as either devas or asuras, or really not 100% devas or asuras, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Right. Although each one of us has both qualities, the Upanishads refer to them as either devas, gods, or asuras, demons. So the Upanishads, very powerful, deep thinking writings, scriptural writings, really term such a person as a deva. He's a god. And another person as an asura. He's a demon. But even the worst demons have positive qualities. And even great people have demonic qualities hidden within them that they try and control. So none of us are pure devas or pure asuras, but a little bit of both. Keep that in mind. Don't be negative about anybody. In the Mahabharata, they talk about the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Pandavas is where the Arjuna is from, the five brothers. and the Kauravas are the hundreds of their cousins, which are the bad. So this again is positive and negative within us. Krishna gives us a detailed explanation of the asuric qualities from verse 6 onwards. And he says, now listen to me, Arjuna, very forcefully. It is important, and that's why he's emphasizing here, to avoid the negative qualities within ourselves. Know the don'ts as well as the do's. Just saying, I do this, I focus on the positive qualities is not good enough. You need to also focus on the don'ts. Don't do this. So from now until the end of this chapter, Krishna will talk about these negative qualities, what they are, what we should avoid, etc. Because it is possible, my friend, it is possible for us to give up these asuric qualities. But we must know them and recognize them very clearly. So that's verse 6. Verse 7. Verse 7 says, people who have asuric qualities do not know what it is to be done, what it is to be done, and what is not to be done or withdrawn from. They're not clear or clean internally. Their conduct is not proper, nor is their conduct truthful. Neither purity, nor good conduct, nor truth is found in them. So this is a description of an asuric person, according to Krishna. From verse 7 to verse 15, Krishna deals with the nature and conduct of an asuric or demonic person. They do not know what should be done, which is known as pravritti, and what should not be done, which is known as nivritti. It's like a thief. A thief who goes and steals from somebody else. He's not doing it because he doesn't know that it is wrong. Because when he goes back to his home, he hides it because he's afraid that somebody's going to steal it from him. So he knows what's right and what's wrong. There are others, like a child, for instance, who might just take something that belongs to somebody else and eat it. He's not aware that he should not be doing that. So there's no nivritti there. There's no demonic negativity. What should not be done. Here we know these asuras show a lack of purity, lack of good conduct, lack of truth. Not like somebody born in a jungle who says, I don't know any better. This is how I was brought up. I don't know anything. Nobody has taught me. These people know, the asuric people, the people in the corporations who take advantage of another, people in large countries, powerful countries, presidents of those countries, the governing bodies of those countries that says, go take this from another country. Great Britain, when it colonized a lot of countries, when they just took because it was there for the taking, without thinking about the effect on the other country, is also asuric. So countries can be asuric, cultures can be asuric, religions can be asuric, and people can be asuric. So, they're looking purely for the enjoyment of their sense organs and their perceptions to say, I want to take, acquire, and enjoy. So in your karma, you do pravritti, that karma that should be done, and nivritti, that karma that should not be done. Several wrong karmas cause mental agitation and suffering. The more nivritti you do, the more negative actions you do, the more negative thoughts you have, you're actually building up your mental agitation. And then when you try to meditate, you can't because your mind just doesn't listen to you. It's so agitated. The right action actually causes peace and prosperity, not just for yourself, but also for those around you and as well for the world. So one of the reasons why swamis, learned people basically teach these things, and whoever is taught is basically told to just pass it forward so that more people can be like this. Can you imagine the effect on the world if more and more people thought very positively and in a generous way? The whole world would change, countries would change. So keep your mind clear, avoid hatred and other negative qualities. And there's lots to be talked about over here. Such people, the asuric people, have improper conduct or even their interaction with others is improper. Their speech is not true. They lie as they're talking. As they're talking, they just tell lies. Lies are followed by more lies. Shankaracharya said this, he called them deceitful people. Those who speak untruths, sometimes even when it's not even necessary to tell an untruth. There's no religious discipline. Whatever religion they follow, each religion has a discipline. You must do this, you must do this, you mustn't do this. They don't follow that. There's no proper conduct or interaction with others. They're not respectful to people of the opposite sex. They're not respectful to elders, to children, to a society, etc. So there's four categories of people who do karma. One is those who have a sharp intellect and can tell as soon as a situation arises what their actions should be and what the choices of action are and what are the right course before the action actually takes place. They can actually quickly determine that my choices are A or B, and A is the right one, B is the wrong one. He or she makes the right choice before the action is done. The emphasis on before. That's the first category. Second is that during the action is when he becomes aware of it. The second is one who has the intellect to use as he or she is performing the action, but not prior to the action. He cannot tell the course of his actions and his life, therefore, in advance. But during the course of the action, he says, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing the wrong thing. I should have done the other. The third is the intellect is weak, but it is still there. It's not as if it's not there. And that's important to know. The intellect is weak. It is there. He cannot perceive ahead of time what his actions should be, nor while he's doing them. But after his actions, which are done impulsively, he realizes that what he did was not right. And the reason this weak intellect is necessary for us to know, because the scriptures wouldn't have talked about it otherwise, is that, for instance, a cow doesn't know right from wrong. It is programmed a certain way. It's programmed to eat grass and greenery. That's it. It does. You put a steak in front of it, it won't eat it. Put chicken in front of it, won't eat it. Any non-vegetarian stuff, it only eats grass. It's programmed that way. Similarly, a lion is programmed to eat meat. You put grass and greenery in front of the lion, he won't eat it. He's programmed a certain way. So you no point giving him scriptures and telling him you shouldn't eat this and you should eat that because it doesn't work. A person with an intellect, however weak, is somebody who can change. And that's why the scriptures say, you have an intellect, however weak it is. You know what you did was wrong, even though you knew it afterwards. And try and strengthen your intellect so you can be aware of what you're doing. And the last is an asura who has neither foresight nor any intellect. Even after finishing their actions, they do not realize what they've done, the consequences or the effects of what they've done. The demonic belong to this category, the fourth one. They do not know. They're asuras. They do not know what action to choose or what to refrain from. And that's the analogy for that is that of a drunkard who is just lying in the streets. We don't see that here in the West. But in India, growing up, I would see on the streets, coming back from medical school sometimes late at night, on the streets, you'd see these drunkards walking. They could barely walk, you know, walking in a crooked way, and then falling down on the streets right in front of me. And the dogs would come and lick them, and you know, they were like a piece of garbage on the street. Yeah. They know not what they do. They're totally asuric. That is what asuric people do. Not that they walk around drunk, but whatever they do, however embarrassing it might be, however bad we may think it is, they have no idea about what they're doing. So that's how asuric people are. They're unclean, just like the person drunk and lying on the street. Their clothes, their speech, their conduct, actions, how to behave in decent places like temples, people of the opposite sex, elderly, respect, dress, etc. All of this is known as achara. Achara means conduct, behavior. Achar also means pickle, but over here it doesn't refer to that. Such a person has no truthfulness. He lies openly. And in life, you cannot be successful when you're like this. Your own mind will not listen to you when you try to meditate, because your own mind says, oh, you're the liar, you lie, I'm not going to listen to you, whatever it is that you say. So let me just basically summarize. Pravritti, positive karmas, positive deeds, nivritti, things that you shouldn't do, not one particular action, rather a path and a goal, such as dharma. That is right, and that is what from what we should withdraw, is the difference. Asuric people have no concept of right and wrong. They're ignorant, so they follow the crowd or some fanatic literature that says, this is what you've got to do. They're Asuric. Media hype that says, this is right, this is wrong, without any discrimination. They don't know when to say no to a path that leads to trouble. Even so, you should stop and think, if I keep doing this path of action, you know, working for this corporation that's telling me to do the wrong things, where will I be in a year, in 5 years, at the end of my life? You've got to keep thinking about this. An Asuric person doesn't. He can't conceptualize what this happens. An Asuric person, in fact, sees a divine person and says, I got to take advantage of this. This is an easy, it's like taking candy from a baby. So an Asuric person takes from the divine person without any compunction, any guilt. So the scriptures say, warn you, if you're a divine person or going towards a spiritual path, be careful of Asuric people. Stay away from them. You know, you may be a divine person. You can't go to a wild dog, a Rottweiler, or a snake, or a lion, and say, listen, I mean well. I'm just going to touch you, okay? I'm just going to pat you. Don't bite me. The lion or the cobra or the dog will bite you, eat you, poison you, whatever it is. There's no limit to what the bad animal, not the bad animal, but the dangerous animal will do. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you see an Asuric person, use your intellect. Stay away from him. Don't try to reason with him. Just scriptures say this Asuric person will take advantage of you. Now, it doesn't mean that once you're being taken advantage of, you're as a divine person, you just sit back and say, you know what? He will get his karma. You take action to control whatever this person's doing to you. You be strong and you try to use whatever legal means there are to get past this. But you can't just give in and allow this to happen. The Asuric people don't see the goodness, the kindness, the compassion, honesty, decency, and nonviolence that a divine person has. They just see him as being weak and to be taken advantage of. Now, this applies to corporations, and it applies to companies and countries. So countries see other countries as being weak and to be taken advantage of, or to colonize and just take their wealth. Corporations that just eat up the smaller corporations because they consider them weak. So an Asuric person doesn't have horns. There's no feature on them. He wears jeans and white t-shirt just like anybody else. And he says, oh, wow, he looks nice, a nice person. There's no such dress code for an Asuric person. He doesn't look a certain way. It is up to your intellect to be wary of saying, who is an Asuric person, who is a demonic person. And such Asuric person can put on acts, and they might look a certain way and act a certain way. It is up to you to gauge that, okay? The difference between an Asura and a Rakshasa. Rakshasa is a demon also, and in Sanskrit, it's divided into Asuras and Rakshasas. An Asura doesn't know. He just thinks, this person is weak, I can take advantage of him. A Rakshasa, like Ravan was in Ramayana, knows what is wrong, and yet he does it. Just like Ravan did with Ram and Sita. So people who don't know, and they have their cell phones on when a lecture is going on, versus those who know, but say, you know what, maybe I'll just not turn it off, and when he calls on me, I'll turn it off at that point. Or loudness in a company is Asuric, not knowing what they were doing. In Japan, when we went there, we noticed, for instance, that everybody was walking in a straight line. If you were they didn't stand around in clusters and crowds and block people. Everybody was very, very considerate of the other person. Whereas we, if we don't know that, we cross the road where there's no pedestrian crossings. In Japan, they will only cross on a pedestrian crossing, even though there's no traffic on it. They just follow the rules for the benefit of the society. If you're walking on a busy train platform, there's no people blocking your way. You can walk as fast as you want. If they want to talk to somebody, they'll grab him. They'll move him closer to the side of the platform and talk over there. Why? Because they know what is right for the country, for the population, etc. I mean, they came up with these masks and wearing masks way, way before COVID ever came about. Why? Because they say, if I thought when I first saw it that they're preventing the germs from going into them. That too, but they were also doing it because they say, I might be coming down with a cold, I'm not sure, but I want to wear this mask so I don't pass it on to others. So that's a divine quality. These are all divine qualities that we should be focusing on, and the asuric qualities we should try and get away from. So Lou, have I gone way, way over our time or what?
Only about 26 minutes, not too bad.
Okay, good.
You asked earlier in the episode about why people would want freedom, using the word freedom, from their desires and from their pleasures. And the reason is those desires and pleasures are fleeting, correct? You want freedom from that hunger and the constant disturbance of your mind in chasing these pleasures and desires.
Very true. There have been a lot of spiritual thinkers who say, you know what? You've come to this earth, this life, this world with karmas, with desires. If you didn't have desires, you wouldn't be reborn. When you have desires, you can't expect somebody to say, I don't want it, from a childhood or adolescence. You can't expect it because those desires are just roaring to be satisfied. It is only after you satisfy a desire, if you keep satisfying it, you know, at some point you will get neutralized and say, this desire doesn't give me pleasure. So to answer your question, when you want freedom is when you realize that these desires are just insatiable. It's right. Like a fire. You know, the scriptures talk about desires being like fire. The more you pour butter or oil onto a fire, it'll just eat that butter, flare up with fire, and then say, I want more. So desires are like that. They just take it, they just flare up, and you get satisfaction at that time, but they want more. There's never any end to it.
That's right. You end up chasing the desires, and in the end, they're pulling you. They're controlling you.
They're controlling you. So, friends, thank you very much for this and for joining us, listening to us. Please join us again for next time. We will do verse 8 and 9, I hope. Thank you.